Back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. My name is Ben Stone, and today is Friday, June 8th, 2012. We are 10 short days away from Pork Fest in New Hampshire. That would be the New Hampshire Porcupine Liberty Festival. And I'm planning on being there, barring some strange circumstances. I'll be in Space 82, I believe. I think that's the one. I don't have my note in front of me that I should have had before I started the podcast. But anyway, I'll be there in the BadQuaker.com motorhome. And so look for the banner. You'll have my pretty smiling face. No, I'm not really smiling. I think I have sort of a stiff look on my face. But you'll see the picture of me with my hat and my glasses and this banner that says BadQuaker.com. Stop by the motorhome and say hi to me. And I teased this over on Facebook. I plan on giving away that hat that's in the picture, the dark hat, not the straw hat that I wear in some of the pictures. That poor old hat was my gardening hat, and it died an unceremonious death. But the other hat, the darker hat, I plan on giving away sometime at Pork Fest if there is anyone interested in taking it. It's not an old, sweaty, worn-out hat. It's in pretty much pristine condition. That'll be sort of an incentive for anybody who wants a cool BadQuaker.com anti-government hat. Just stop by the motorhome there. And I haven't quite figured out how I'm going to give it away, but I'll do so. There were reports earlier going around that, as crazy as this may seem, there's actual documentation of this. As crazy as it may seem, the FBI is attempting to infiltrate the New Hampshire Liberty, the Free State Project, and the folks up there in New Hampshire and their processes, and they have attempted to lure some of the Free State people into their ranks. So on Facebook, I put on the notation about my hat. I said that if you'll show up to the motorhome there at Pork Fest with proper FBI identification, or you know, any other tax feeding organization like that. Let's wait for the airplane to go by here. I have the window open because it's so nice outside, so we may have a lot of background noises like that to suffer. Anyway, so I put that on my Facebook page, that anybody that shows up with a valid FBI identification or any other tax feeder like that, that can identify themselves, they'll get a double chance to win my hat. So, of course, that's not to say that any of them would have any interest in it, but I like to take pokes at the tax feeders whenever possible. This is just a follow-up on some things that were going on. I had made mention in one of the... Baggy, you are so psychotic. The window is open, as I said, and she's up against the window with her face against the screen, and she's trying to reach and paw at the birds that are outside, except the glass, she's pawing at the glass on the other half of the window with her paw while pushing her face against the screen. She can't understand the concept of glass and screen. It's baffling to her. She'll sometimes just ram right into the window trying to leap at the birds and the squirrels outside. Anyway, sometime back, I don't know, a week or two ago, something like that, on a podcast, I had talked about the inconsistency of people on the right wing who You know, during the 90s, somewhat during the 80s, but real vocally during the 90s, they hated the idea of American soldiers wearing NATO configuration on their uniforms and taking orders from NATO commanders. There was a real upset among the right-wing leaning people during the Clinton years over this particular topic. But then, you know, in comes in comes Baby Bush, as I like to call him. And somehow all these objections to NATO, the right wing just seems to have, it slipped their mind. And in their blind following of Baby Bush, they began to just accept all things NATO. And now, so we have in Chicago, not long ago, there was a big NATO summit, and a lot of the Occupy folks went down there to Chicago to protest. And I had said, I had made some statements about it and the inconsistency in people on the right that were hating, you know, that there's a lot of hate coming from the right towards the Occupy people, but they should be supporting anything that rejects NATO. But their hatred, because these Occupy people tend to be leftists, they tend to be socialists, they tend to be somewhat confused in what they want. You know, they tend to sort of want, they can see the problems in corporate America, but they don't see that the corporate entities are nothing more than an aspect of the state, and that government supports the corporate entities, and the corporate entities return the favor by supporting government. They fail to see that connection. So they beg the government to fix what the evils that they see in the corporate entities. It's like going to one mafia boss to ask him to help you with some other mafia boss. It makes no sense whatsoever. But there's a lot of hatred on the right towards these Occupy people simply because they perceive them as being, you know, left-wing hippies and dirty and all these things like this. And so my statement was something to the effect of, well, the right wing ought to be upset. They ought to remember their roots and be a little bit upset about the idea that NATO is meeting in Chicago. And then there was some email exchanges between myself and a listener, because I was seeing one portrayal of what was going on in Chicago with the protests and with NATO and everything. I was seeing one portrayal of that on the national media. And the listener in Chicago was seeing a completely different coverage there in Chicago from the local media. And so we've exchanged emails back and forth. And this is the latest. I'm going to read you the email that I've got now. This is, I very much trust what's said in this email. This is the latest coming from an observer in Chicago that is a listener to the podcast here. I'm going to do my best to read the email, but I've said this pretty regularly. I'm really bad at reading other people's stuff, so I'm going to stumble, and you know, so stick with me. I'm a horrible out loud reader. Okay, here we go. I'm learning that the real story on the protesters is somewhere between what mainstream media, what mainstream news said, and what our local broadcasters have said. The problem appears that the heavy-handed way that Rahm, that's the mayor, Rahm Emanuel, the problem appears to be the heavy-handed way that Rahm dealt with the media. Any cameras close to the cops had to be run by people with recognized press passes. That is, only national-type media could take pictures of the cops and the protesters. Undoubtedly, some indies, maybe even Cop Block, I haven't checked with him yet, got some footage, but those who were caught filming police had their cameras and their cell phones either confiscated or smashed. And yes, it appears there were lots of plainclothes cops and rent-a-cops among the protesters. So what appears to be horizontal enforcement gave the officials a plausible deniability. Consequently, our indie media kept their cameras and microphones away from the streets and back in the parks. The story seems to be that those in the streets were predominantly anti-war and probably mostly anti-NATO, as related by the national media with their government-recognized press passes, while those in the parks were mostly other assorted lefties and those anti-NATO types who didn't want to risk confrontation with the cops, as related by the local indies. So during the events, we heard one story and y'all heard a different story. If you'd like, I can probably point out some other man on. So, well, this is okay. So, well, I guess the rest of it is just secondary to what we were. So you see there that what it's really difficult if we know that this happened in Chicago, because right here we have a person there and investigating it and looking at it, and we have another set of eyes that are out here looking in, as I do, looking through, trying to see what's going on from the outside. If that's what's going on in Chicago, now maybe Chicago is an extreme version because, you know, the mayor of Chicago traditionally and somewhat legendarily has a lot more control over the message coming out because he has such a grip with the corrupt Chicago police. Most cities don't have police that are that fanatically controlled by their mayor and that level of corruption that Chicago has on a legendary level. But considering that, you know, cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, Oakland, New York, New Orleans, you know, Miami, these cities have horribly corrupt police forces as well. So it's really, and then you think about that in Europe, what's going on in the different protests and cities in Europe, and what do the locals know as opposed to what's being put out onto the international scene and through major media. So you see that the truth probably lies somewhere in there. But it's so disguised by so much of the propaganda that's being pushed in different directions to keep the message different locally than it is, you know, on the exterior. And I think as the state gets more and more desperate, and as the years pass by and oppression from the state becomes more and more dramatic, I think you're going to see more of that. You're going to see one message getting out locally and a totally different message being sold to the rest of the public. And this will give them the excuse to crack down as hard as they need to locally in the cities while still maintaining the support, not just of, you know, the country, so to speak, but even other cities. If you can make out, if you can use the media to show that protesters, let's say in Chicago, are way over the line, then people in Los Angeles are going to say, yeah, you know, it's a good thing they cracked down on them because we can't have just crazy, you know, violence in the streets. So even within the big cities, from one to the other, the media will pit, you know, as a puppet of the government as it is, the media will pit city opinions against other cities for the purpose of controlling them. So I think that will be happening more and more. So, you know, it's really hard to get a true indication of what's actually happening under these circumstances. And again, it's going to get worse. We're going to see more and more of it. Now, I want to take this in slightly a different direction. Let's get, let me recap something first. Let me recap something that I talked about yesterday. I was talking yesterday about the great man theory and how Herbert Spencer had made a really good argument disproving the great man theory. The great man theory, just a quick recap, the great man theory is the idea that in history there have been these just almost magical individuals that have popped up right at the right time. You know, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Charlemagne, Alexander the Great. Throughout different times, different people have fit this role of Ronald Reagan, Ron Paul. And the idea of the great man theory is that, you know, that either the gods or God or providence or fate or whatever has brought this person to this time for a specific purpose, and therefore we acknowledge this individual as being unique and very special, and he is the great man that's there for the time to save the day, when in fact actually just the opposite is true. If there's a market for the great man, if there is a market for someone to step in and fill a leadership role, Well, markets hate a void. Markets hate a gap. Markets seek constantly to fill a need. So if there's a need for a leader will come forward. Now, so when the leader accomplishes something, there's this tendency to think, oh, well, look, the great man did this. Well, somebody was going to fill that role and do it. And it doesn't matter if it was, you know, Abraham Lincoln or George Washington or Ronald Reagan or Charlemagne or Alexander the Great or whoever. It doesn't matter. The market would have provided somebody. Society in general, as society moves and develops, society builds the leaders that we need at any particular time, and that's through the market processes that it does that. It's not necessary, and this is not a theology or anti, you know, it's not a atheist or theist argument, really. You can look at Herbert Spencer maybe took some hardline positions on this, but if you look at his at the facts, at what he's really saying, you don't have to be an atheist to understand what he's talking about, and you don't have to throw away your theism to understand that you just simply don't need to bring God or fate or the fates or the gods, or you don't need to bring any of those things in to use as an explanation when a leader pops up in society and does a specific thing. You can use strictly reason and see that whatever you might believe about God or not believe about God, the great man theory is just not necessary. The market, whenever the market perceives a need, the market will fill that need. And now you could also argue, you take a particular leader, it doesn't matter which one in history, any leader in history that you want to choose, and you say, well, this was the great man, here's evidence of the great man theory. The problem is, how do you know that that was the best product for that particular time? So, for example, looking at it from a market perspective, any of us old folks that remember the great market battle between VHS of videotapes and Betamax videotapes. Here we have a classic example of two products in the market attempting to fill the same need at the same time. And a variety of market pressures in every direction, some of that thrown off and distorted by government interference. But in the end, what happened was the VHS tape won big, and the Betamax tape died a very nasty, ugly, stinking death. I'm saying that because I have a Betamax tape of some of my children's earliest activities, and I'm sunk. There it is. I'm going to have to at some point in time try to get somebody to convert it for me, but any investment that I made in Betamax was lost because the market killed it. And again, that was, you know, there were governmental influences and there were other influences as well. But so then, did the market pick the best? Was the best thing given to me? Well, first off, I don't need God to explain Betamax and the VHS battle. Fate didn't give me VHS and cause VHS to beat Betamax in the marketplace. I can explain the triumph of VHS without bringing in the fates. It's just not necessary to say that VHS was special and given to us by... You see the comparison here. It's just not necessary to bring in theology to explain market pressures. And so the same thing with the VHS and the beta argument. You can take that and apply it to somebody like Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln certainly was a man of powerful leadership. And he stepped forward in a time that altered history, altered the course of history. On the other hand, what if that person had been slightly different? What if Abraham Lincoln had died in some, you know, hatchet accident when he was 14, and history was not blessed with his presence? What would have happened? Would Jefferson Davis have stepped into that role? Quite possibly, Jefferson Davis, Although a hardcore statist, much like Abraham Lincoln, Jefferson Davis was the man of the moment in many ways, just like Lincoln, and didn't lose by all that much against Lincoln. So then what would have happened if things had gone that direction? Well, there's no way of telling. One thing that probably wouldn't have happened, hundreds of thousands of Americans wouldn't have been brutally killed in a nasty, unnecessary war had Abraham Lincoln just accidentally died of a tragic hatchet accident at the age of 14. So that's one thing. So then, really, was it the great man that was brought to us by Providence? Or was it just that there was leadership needed? And due to advertising, or in the case of government, we would call it propaganda, due to advertising, one product was preferred in the market. And the market's not always right. In the long run, the market always produces the best result as compared to anything that uses aggression. But in the short run, the market can be wrong. In the case of Beta, you know, Beta was a better quality tape. It was smaller, more compact. It had many advantages over VHS. But VHS won the day, not because of Providence, but because of forces that were influencing the market and advertising. So maybe with a different advertising campaign, perhaps Abraham Lincoln would not have been the man of the day, and 300,000 Americans would have lived and stayed with their families, and hundreds of thousands of young men would not have been horribly maimed for the rest of their life, and the army, the American army, would not have learned the brutal, horrible lessons of war and then taken those out on the Western prairies and slaughtered Native Americans at a discount rate with no feeling, and doing so with the heel of their boot rather than to waste bullets as they're killing children and women. Maybe, just maybe, had an advertising campaign been slightly different, Abraham Lincoln would have not been a name that we would have readily recognized. He would have just been some other Chicago politician, like so many other dirty Chicago politicians. And maybe Jefferson Davis would have been a side note in history as, oh yeah, he was a president for one term and da-da-da, nothing really important happened. Maybe that could have been the answer. So how does that relate to anything at all in today's world? Well, it kind of does. You know, I've kind of dropped Ron Paul's name in there a couple times in this little discussion here. And the reason why is because Ron Paul is not magic. Ron Paul is not a great man brought to us through Providence that now we can move ahead into the future with this great leader. None of those things are a legitimate way to look at this situation. Ron Paul is a man who, when market forces needed a leader, Ron Paul was there and stepped in and filled that role. If it weren't for Ron Paul, like I said in yesterday's podcast, if it weren't for Ron Paul, who knows, it might be Peter Schiff, it might be Tom Woods, it might be somebody else, it might be someone who doesn't pop to mind immediately. You know, maybe it would be Rand Paul, who knows? Probably not, but who knows? Either way, somebody would have filled that leadership gap. Now, what if it would have been someone not Ron Paul? What if the market need for Ron Paul was not filled by Ron Paul, but was instead filled with somebody like Andrew Napolitano, or perhaps, Peter Schiff, or, Doug Casey, or somebody else? What would happen if one of those people filled the Ron Paul position? A person not in government, a person with less attachment to government. Where would the liberty movement be today? It would be, I project, because we're talking about market needs. We're not talking about a great man. We're talking about the market needs. And I would argue that had Ron Paul not been a part of the picture, someone would have filled that market need. And that someone would have taken the liberty movement in a different direction. And that may not have been the direction of depending on government to fix government. Because really, that's the solution Ron Paul has offered. make me president and I'll use government to fix government. Now, many Ron Paul supporters know that Ron Paul doesn't really believe that government can fix government. Ron Paul has said you cannot achieve liberty incrementally. You can't go into government and make it and fix it a little at a time and get more liberty out of it. Ron Paul has said this. But so many of his followers don't hear that part of the advertising. They only hear the propaganda part. Ron Paul's going to go in and he's going to kill the Federal Reserve and he's going to kill the Department of Education. He's going to kill this department and that department. And he's going to cut back government. He's going to do all these wonderful things. Ron Paul's going to take the government and use the violence of government to fix the violence of government. And of course, they don't say it that way because it's nonsensical. Because it's nonsensical. You cannot fix government by using government. If you have a finger that you've accidentally hit with your hammer, you can't fix the pain of that finger by hitting it more with the hammer. And all the government has is a hammer. All it has is violence and aggression and theft and lies. That's all it possesses. So you can't use the violence of government to fix what government has harmed. And many people in the Ron Paul movement know this. And Ron Paul has said this, but so many people in the Ron Paul movement really believe the propaganda that the government can be used to fix the government. And all of what's going on right now, before I get into it, let me check my time here. I don't have time enough to go in this direction. Tell you what, let me pause now, and I'll do the commercial, and then when I come back from the commercial, I'll take this in a slightly different direction. Hang with me. I'll be right back.
I am so excited about Pork Fest this year.
Pork Fest? What's that?
It's the Porcupine Freedom Festival, a fun and educational camping event put on every summer by the Free State Project. This year it's going to be happening June 18th to the 24th at Rogers Campground in Lancaster, New Hampshire.
Okay, I like camping and I definitely like freedom, but my budget is tight.
Tickets are only $30 for the whole week if you get them before May 1st.
Well, that sounds reasonable, but what goes on there?
What doesn't go on at Porkfest? There are speakers, family fun, dance parties, karaoke, a comedy roast, hiking, campfires, sports, a wedding, and all kinds of delicious food. But the part that I like best is spending time with other people who love freedom.
That's sounding pretty good to me. Where can I go to learn more?
Check out porkfest.com and make sure you spell pork like a porcupine. PORCFEST.com. Like what you see?
Looks like a blast. Okay, I'm in. See you at Porkfest.
While you're there, check out how you can become a VIP, very important porcupine, for a modest donation. See you at Porkfest.
How would you like to support BadQuaker.com and get something nice for yourself at the same time? I want to tell you about Survival Gear Bags. It's run by my friend Kelly, who believes in and adheres to the non-aggression principle. Kelly's customers know him for his great customer service and his personal touch because Kelly handles all customer service himself. The main focus of Survival Gear Bags is to allow you to build your own custom emergency kits with quality gear. Now, I know this because I bought my bug out bag from Survival Gear Bags over 2 years ago, and I've gone all over the country with it by my side. And you can rest assured that the prices will always be the best they can be at Survival Gear Bags. And if you use the link from BadQuaker.com, they'll probably throw in something for free for you with your order. Now, how do you do this? Well, it's simple. You go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side of the page, click on the picture of the backpack. Then look around at Survival Gear Bags and find the stuff you want. You'll help BadQuaker.com, and you'll support a merchant that's one of us. Now, I want to tell you about another way you can support BadQuaker.com and get something really cool at the same time. Shire Silver. Shire Silver is the proud seller of silver and gold trade cards. Shire Silver believes that silver and gold trade cards will show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. So what are silver and gold trade cards? There are specific weights of gold and silver laminated inside credit card-sized tradable cards. They're a handy and affordable way to trade precious metals. These cards received nationwide recognition when they were widely used as barter at the New Hampshire Porcupine Festival. You want a beer and a hot dog? Hand them a Shire Silver 5 card and get a Shire Silver 1 spot back as change. So again, what do? Well, you go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side, just below the backpack, you'll see the Shire Silver trade cards. Click on those cards and then check out Shire Silver's site. be sure and watch Ron's video that's right there on the main page, and then swap some of those ridiculous Federal Reserve notes for something of real value, something you can keep, trade, or give as the coolest gift ever. But be sure and use the link from badquaker.com. Thanks, folks. All right. Thank you for sticking with me through the commercial. That was kind of weird. Wonderful Windows 7 crashed on me right as I started to pause the recording to put in the commercial break. Windows 7 crashed. So, lovely. Anyway, let's see if I can pick back up on what I was talking about. What I was going to leap over to was this wonderful message that we're getting that Rand Paul has endorsed Mitt Romney. Now, I don't want to say this in a way that anybody can possibly take it that I'm, you know, that I'm happy about this in any possible way. I would love to live in a world. I would love to live in a world where, you know, all we have to do is elect the right person and get them in power and they'll fix everything and where everything will be wonderful and lollipops will grow from lollipop trees and rainbows and butterflies will be everywhere. I would love to live in that kind of a world. And in many ways, I would love to be able to return mentally to believe in that kind of a world like so many people do. You know, there are advantages to living in bliss, but the fact is that these things are just not realistic. As I was saying, the aggression of government can't be used to fix government. You can't use something evil and something horrible that relies on aggression. You can't use that to do good things with. So what I was talking about was that there was a market for Ron Paul. Ever since 9/11, ever since the Patriot Act, ever since the government began to really rapidly expand and just stomp on Americans' rights in every possible way. And this is, you know, we're seeing it most dramatically in the U.S., but we're seeing it also all around the world as governments have used these excuses of terrorism and uses the excuses of the bad economy and all these things to continue to expand itself and become more and more oppressive. And in some places, things are used as an excuse, like crime is used as an excuse to beat up the masses with and bring more and more government oppression. And of course, that doesn't solve the crime problem, but it's an excuse to expand government. So here in the U.S., we have seen this market demand for Ron Paul. And because we had a market demand ever since, you know, roughly since the 9/11 attacks in 2001, because there's been a market for Ron Paul, we have had a Ron Paul. But like I'm saying, if there was someone else and not Ron Paul, then they would have stepped in. They would have been that Ron Paul. And whether or not Ron Paul is a better option or some other person, you know, there's no way of knowing. But you have to realize that that marketing, that propaganda, you know, marketing is like advertisement. Advertising. Let me say it this way: advertising is to the market what propaganda is to the government. And that's not, you know, that's not a perfect explanation of either one, but really that's kind of what we're talking about. Advertisements can be true or false. Propaganda can be true or false. Propaganda is typically used by the government, and advertising is typically used in the private industry. But either way, you can use either to shift people's opinions to make bad decisions. And so now, As I started to say a second ago, I take no joy in saying this. I take no pleasure at all in saying this. I wish I could be more naive like I used to be, and I wish I could believe that a Ron Paul or someone like that can fix government. I wish I could believe that again, but my eyes have been opened, and I can't unsee that which has been seen. So Rand Paul comes out and endorses Mitt Romney. And, you know, almost a year ago, I began saying in different formats and different locations that the GOP would offer a false Ron Paul, a Ron Paul substitute. They would, the GOP, when it got down to the point of where Ron Paul was clearly going to lose, but the GOP wants to hold on to all those Ron Paul enthusiastic voters, the GOP will offer a false Ron Paul. And I even mentioned several times that that might be Rand, but it was too early to tell a year ago. Well, a few weeks back, Rand Paul began testing the waters by saying specific things in public that sounded like Romney was acceptable to him. And he has moved more and more in that direction and slowly introduced this concept so that I believe it was last night on Fox News, on one of the Fox News shows, maybe Hannity or something, that he actually came out and endorsed Mitt Romney. Now, some people are saying, well, that's not really what he said. Well, yeah, it is. If you just look at the transcript, that's what he said. He didn't use the word endorse, but that's pretty much what he said. And really, and then, you know, this morning I began looking around on the internet to see what Ron Paul supporters were saying about this. And there were some calling Rand, you know, a traitor or so forth like this. But I saw a lot of hardline Ron Paul supporters who 2 or 3 months ago would not have accepted this. They were saying Ron Paul or no one. They were saying no way we'll come out to support Mitt Romney because even if Ron Paul can't make it, Romney's no better than Obama. And they were saying that just a few weeks ago, and now I'm seeing Ron Paul people actually saying, well, you know, Rand did this because this solidifies a leadership role in the Republican Party, and really what we need to do is get control of the Republican Party. And we're doing that on a local level. It's a grassroots thing. We're getting control of the Republican Party from the bottom up, and getting Rand Paul into this position of endorsing Mitt Romney, that actually secures Rand Paul as in a leadership role in the Republican Party. And holy cow, who sold out? When people deep in the Ron Paul camp are now singing that song, who sold out? Did Rand really sell out, or is Rand simply responding to market pressures? Is Rand simply responding to the obvious of what's around him? Rand clearly believes that the way to fix bad government is to get in government and use government to fix government. Rand clearly believes that, otherwise he wouldn't be in the Senate right now. And why would he believe that? Well, because his father has a lifetime reputation of doing it, not of saying it. Ron Paul has said on many occasions that government is bad. He's made indications that he believes in anarchism, specifically anarcho-capitalism. Ron Paul has made those statements. But Ron Paul's life tells a different story, a story involved in government, using government to adjust government. And so Rand, you know, it's a funny thing. When Ron Paul was in Congress, and when Lou Rockwell ran, when Lou Rockwell worked for Ron Paul, I believe he was his campaign manager or something. I can't remember exactly what Lou Rockwell's role was, but it was an odd thing because they were both working and living in Washington D.C. and Rand Paul would actually catch a ride. Ron Paul, when he would go to work every morning, would pick up Lou Rockwell, and they would carpool together into Washington, D.C. to work. And Rand Paul, as a high school student, would ride with them to high school, and they would drop him off on their way into Washington, D.C. to go to work. Now imagine this scenario in your mind. You have a teenage Rand Paul in the car with Lou Rockwell, an anarchist, a somewhat radical anarchist, and Ron Paul, an anarcho-capitalist-leaning libertarian Republican. And so imagine the discussions as they drive into Washington, D.C., and imagine how these things would play in the mind of a teenager. And imagine also that a teenager learns more from the actions of his parents than the words. So it doesn't really matter what they were saying as they're riding into Washington, D.C., carpooling like that. The fact is, the actions displayed to this teenager were, we're going into Washington, D.C., we're going into the belly of this beast. We're going in there and we're going to try to use this monster to do good. And so that was the example set to Rand Paul as a teenager. Therefore, it doesn't matter what Ron Paul said in words or what he wrote in books or what he said in lectures at the Mises Institute. What really matters in the development of young Rand Paul was what he saw his father doing. And there's, you know, there's a lesson on so many levels there. But here we are today with Rand Paul endorsing Mitt Romney. At this point, I want to read two quotes for you. And I'd like for you to listen to those quotes very carefully and, you know, forgive my clumsy reading, because I've already apologized for how bad I read other people's stuff. But forgive my clumsy reading and try to hear really what's being said in these two quotes. And what I'd like to do is, after I read the two quotes, I'd like for you, the listener, in your mind, to try to figure out who these two quotes are attributed to. And I'll even tell you where the quotes appeared. And then we'll talk further about that. Well, you won't talk, but I'll be talking. Okay, so here's the first quote. And this is from Reason Magazine. Okay? So here's the quote. If you analyze it, I believe the very heart and soul of conservatism is libertarianism. I think conservatism is really a misnomer, just as liberalism is a misnomer for the liberals. If we were back in the days of the revolution, so-called conservatives today would be the liberals, and the liberals would be the Tories. The basis of conservatism is a desire for less government interference or less centralized authority or more individual freedom. And this is a pretty general description also of what libertarianism is. Now I can't say that I agree with all the things that the present group who call themselves libertarians in the sense of the party say, because I think that like any political movement, there are shades, and there are libertarians who almost go over at the point of wanting no government at all or anarchy. I believe there are legitimate government functions. There is a legitimate need in an orderly society for some government to maintain freedom, or we will have tyranny by individuals. The strongest man on the block will run the neighborhood. We have government to ensure that we don't, each one of us, have to carry a club to defend ourselves. But again, I stand on my statement that I think that libertarianism and conservatism are traveling the same path. Now, as I'm reading all that, that's the end of the quote there, and that's out of Reason Magazine. That's out of an interview in Reason Magazine. As you hear that quote, just kind of try to imagine in your mind who it is that might have said that to Reason Magazine. And some of the high points, just to touch on it again, he makes the statement, conservatism is very much the heart and soul of conservatism is libertarianism. A pretty general description of libertarianism is that they want less centralized authority and more individual freedom. And the other thing he says here is there's a legitimate need in an orderly society for some government to maintain freedom, or we have tyranny by individuals. The strongest man on the block will run the neighborhood. But we have government to ensure that we don't, each of us, have to carry a club to defend ourselves. So now we think about that statement to Reason Magazine and just roll that around in your mind. It's not necessary for you to have to carry a club to defend yourself because the government's here for you to defend you, Okay. And without that, there would be tyranny. Without government here to protect you, there would be tyranny. Okay, so that's from Reason Magazine, from an interview. Now, this was an interview that took place, it wasn't this year, but it took place in July. The interview in Reason Magazine took place in July, and I'll tell you the year in a minute. In September of the same year, the following statement was made to Guns and Ammo magazine. And this was not in the interview form. It was actually in a written column published by Guns and Ammo magazine. So I want you to hear the stark difference here in the person talking about how government is absolutely required to keep us from having tyranny by individuals, and how we don't need to walk around carrying a club to defend ourselves because we have government. And keep in mind also, this person who talked to Reason Magazine basically said libertarianism and conservatism at its core are the same thing. There's just some crazy libertarians who want to get rid of government, and then you'd have to be carrying a club all the time to defend yourself. Okay, so that was from Reason. Now here's the one from a column published in Guns and Ammo 2 months later in the same year. Okay, here we go. There are those in America today who have come to depend absolutely on government for their security. And when government fails, they seek to rectify that failure in the form of granting government more power. So as government has failed to control crime and violence with the means given it by the Constitution, they seek to give it more power at the expense of the Constitution. But in doing so, in their willingness to give up their arms in the name of safety, they are already giving up their protection from what has always been the chief source of despotism, government. Let me read that again, because that's important. Let me just back up and read that again. So as government has failed to control crime and violence with the means given it by the Constitution, they seek to give it more power at the expense of the Constitution. But in doing so, in their willingness to give up their arms in the name of safety, they are really giving up their protection from that, from what has always been the chief source of despotism, government. And he goes on to say, Lord Acton said, power corrupts. Surely then, if this is true, the more power we give to government, the more corrupt it will become. And if we give it the power to confiscate our arms, we also give up the ultimate means to combat that corrupt power. In doing so, we can only assume that we will eventually be totally subject to it. When dictators come to power, the first thing they do is take the people's weapons. It makes it so much easier for the secret police to operate. It makes it so much easier to force the will of the ruler upon the ruled. So, in Reason Magazine, in July, we have this one person saying that we need legitimate government for an orderly society, and the only thing that keeps individual tyrants from rising up is government, and without government, we'd all have to carry around a club to protect ourselves. But because we have government, we don't have to do that. We don't have to walk around and protect ourselves because we have government to do that for us. And somehow, this same person in Reason Magazine is telling us that conservatism and libertarianism are at their heart really the same thing. But this other quote here from Guns and Ammo, and I will point out, if you notice the one in Reason Magazine, it kind of is downplaying the need to self-protect and upplaying the idea that government is good and is here to protect you. But then in this interview with Guns and Ammo, we see a totally different story. Government is the source of despotism. Government grows and becomes more corrupt with more power. Government is why we need our guns and ammo. Government is why we cannot give up the means to combat corrupt government. Government is the very thing that threatens us. And to give up our power How did he say it? So his government has failed to control crime and violence with the means given it by the Constitution. They seek to give it more power at the expense of the Constitution. So you just throw the Constitution away and keep expanding the role of government. That's bad. And yet, the first person in reason basically said that that's good. And who are these two people talking? And what year did this take place? These two speeches, well, this interview in Reason magazine, and this column written and published in Guns and Ammo, happened in 1975. Reason, the Reason interview was published July 1st, 1975, and the column written by the same individual was published in Guns and Ammo September 1st, 1975, and Ronald Reagan was the author of both. Now, to get a little bit better grasp of Ronald Reagan, I'd like for you to go over to badquaker.com. And on the page where this podcast exists, take a look for the link to Anthony Gregory's story on Ronald Reagan. In spite of everything that's believed about Ronald Reagan, if I recall, Ronald Reagan lowered taxes twice, I believe, maybe three times. But he increased taxes 11 times, including increasing more than offsetting the amount that he had cut taxes. He actually put through one legislation, or he signed one legislation that cut taxes for some of the poorest Americans, but then dramatically raised taxes on corporations and so forth to make up for it. And in addition to that, you know, he dumped a huge Social Security tax on people that didn't exist before that. He brought in whole new waves of people into Social Security that weren't involved in it before. Well, I don't know if I said it or not. It's in my notes here, and I don't recall if I said it. But according to Anthony Gregory, he expanded government by something close to 90%. He raised taxes 11 times. He added whole new departments to the government. He did not close any of the departments like education and so forth that he had promised he would close. He didn't do any of that. He didn't privatize Social Security like he claimed he would. For all the hard right wing Republicans and conservatives that supported him on the abortion issue, he essentially did nothing to do any significant action in that area. He completely let down the right wing on that topic. He dramatically expanded. You know, it's been said that the so-called war on drugs was declared by Richard Nixon. He's the one that started using the terminology, and supposedly he very famously gave Elvis Presley a badge and began the war on drugs. But then that was words only. There were very little actions took place, and we went all through the 70s without any real serious opposition to the drug market. It was illegal, but there wasn't really a lot done about it beyond that. But Ronald Reagan came in with a fury and put legs on the war on drugs. He's the guy who really ratcheted things up and made the war on drugs violent. He's the one that actually came in and brought serious government money and serious thuggery into the war on drugs. And he's the one that drove the market away from such things as marijuana and eventually into cocaine and away from cocaine and into crack and away from crack and into meth and so forth. And the reason that we have seen the horrible escalation of violence in the drug culture, and the reason that we've seen the escalation and financing of gangs, is directly due to this war on drugs that Ronald Reagan gave us. So Ronald Reagan was self-contradictory in the things that he said as he buttered the bread, so to speak, with all the right terminology when he's talking to libertarians in Reason magazine. And then he goes over to Guns and Ammo and says almost the opposite and butters their bread in a totally different way. But then once he gets power, what does he do? It's just the opposite of everything that he's said the entire time. And yet, if you look back and you listen to what people say about Ronald Reagan, you would think that he was this great conservative and very libertarian, and he cut government and he did all these wonderful things. That's because it's all propaganda and it's all lies. Ronald Reagan did none of those things. Ronald Reagan expanded government dramatically, expanded the power of government, pushed government out in different directions, used the military aggressively. He did all the things that he condemned. He did all those things. And yet people only remember the parts that they want to remember. Now, so how does that have anything whatsoever to do with Ron Paul? Well, remember, Ron Paul's been replaced. Ron Paul is going to end his campaign, and he's not going to run for any more offices. He said that. So what is all this going on with Rand Paul and all that? Well, the same thing is happening with the Ron Paul movement that happened with the Tea Party movement. Ron Paul started the Tea Party movement, and then the GOP moved directly into it, took it over, and used it for their means. And they did so that they could put more senators in and more representatives into the House of Representatives. That was their goal in taking over the Tea Party, which they did with blinding efficiency. And so now the Ron Paul campaign is nearing its end, and Rand Paul has already shown his hand. And in many ways, Rand Paul represents the Tea Party end of the Ron Paul movement. So now we see exactly what the purpose of the Tea Party has been right along. And we see what's going to happen to Ron Paul. He's going to step out. He's going to move on. And all those followers who believe the idea that Ron Paul could have gone into government and could have fixed the things that are wrong with government, all those people are going to have two choices. Well, really, they'll have three choices, but they'll only see two of those three choices. The two choices they'll see is drop out altogether and stop being active in any way, which the Republicans will be fine with that. The Republicans or any political group is fine with people dropping completely out of the system because then they're not a threat. The other thing that will be offered to the Ron Paul Republicans is to get behind Rand and get behind the legacy of Ron Paul's movement and become a part of the GOP, and they'll do this under the guise that they're trying to move it from the ground up. They're trying to get in there on the grassroots level and move the Republican Party from the ground up. That'll be the guise that they're operating under. And yet it didn't happen with Ronald Reagan. It didn't happen through all the things that he promised throughout the 70s. It didn't happen when he finally took power. Those things that he had promised, he never did. He just simply was a right-wing excuse to bring in wave after wave of left-leaning policies. Because the progressives, the leftists, the socialists, they own the GOP. They always have. The GOP is just simply a false party that's used to get people to believe that what they're doing is moving away from socialism, when in fact it's more socialism. And that's the direction Rand Paul is going to take the Ron Paul followers that stay active and in the Republican Party and still believe that they can fix what's wrong with government by using government. And then the third option, which very few will take, is to realize the truth of the folly of using government to fix government. Folks, for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com. And thank you very much for listening today.